How's it going, everyone? We're here with another episode of the Hardwood Homies NBA Draft Podcast. I'm your host, Jackson Hoy, and joining me in studio today is my good friend, Cesar Smokowski. How's it going, Cesar?
Hey, what's good, man? I'm excellent. Welcome, everybody, to the most dangerous Hide Your Mothers, Hide Your Sisters, Hide Your Baby Brothers podcast on the net, Hardwood Homies, man. We're on the last episode of our mock draft series, so we got a lot to talk about, man.
Yeah, that's right. We are doing picks 46 through 60 in our mock draft today. And once again, if you have not listened to parts 1, 2, and 3, be sure to go check those out. Those are all up on iTunes, so you can go give those a listen and hear the first 45 picks of our mock draft. We're not going to recap all those here for you, but we will recap the full mock draft at the end of this episode. And once again, before we start, be sure to go leave reviews on iTunes. Again, we've been climbing up into those top charts list on iTunes. We've been getting good reviews, and we'd love to see that continue. So please go leave those reviews if you're listening to this. And just a refresher on the methodology, we are doing a mix of what we think the team should do and what we think they will do, basing a lot of our rankings off of the big board in my 2017 draft notebook, which you can find at rebrand.ly/jhoydraft. And so a thing to note is, you know, you're going to see a lot of guys go in this section and you're going to think like, wow, that guy should go higher. He's better than that. A couple examples of that, not to spoil anything, but Caleb Swanigan and Bam Adebayo. You know, some people have those guys ranked as first round guys, and we've got them going in the last 15 picks, but it's just because there are so many big men in this draft and there are only so many spots for big men. And some of these guys are going to fall in the real draft. You know, I think that's something that we've noticed over the last couple of years. I mean, you saw a guy like Deontay Davis fall all the way to the second round last season when some people had him pegged as, you know, almost a top 10 lottery prospect. I mean, I specifically remember a lot of people mocked him to the Raptors at 9 last season, and the Raptors passed on him at 27 eventually. So, you know, some of these big men are going to fall. That's just the way it is. And, you know, it just happened to be a couple guys in this class that we chose for this scenario. You know, maybe it's not those two guys, but there are going to be some big men who fall. And just because we have, you know, a big man going 47 doesn't mean that we think, you know, he's the 47th best player in this class. You know, some of these guys are better than their draft slots. That's just what it's going to be. But when there's limited amounts of guards and wings in this class and there's a glut of big men, the guards and wings are going to get overdrafted and the big men are going to fall. But with that said, we're going to dive into this with the first pick of the 46 through 60 portion. We have the Philadelphia 76ers with their third second round pick already, and we're going to have them going international with this selection. Once again, after going with Rodions Kurucs at number 39, we're going to have them taking the Belgian guard, Kostja Muschidi, with this pick. The 6'5" youngster who was playing with Mega Vizura last season. Muschidi, you know, he's a guy who was impressive at the Hoop Summit. You know, when he was hitting shots, he looked really good. And that's kind of the story with him. You know, 6'5" with a 7-foot wingspan, a little bit of ball handling ability, but really just a lot of rawness to his game. And, you know, he's actually a very good defender. I do like a lot of what Muschidi does on defense, you know, with his athleticism and his long arms and his ability to just kind of create havoc on that end. He plays very hard. His offensive game is so dependent on his jump shot, which is very streaky. You know, only 32% last season with Mega Vizura, I think. So Muschidi's a guy who, you know, a team can take a shot on him. And the 76ers, I think, should just be grabbing these 3-and-D prospects, as we talked about on the last episode with them, grabbing our guy Sterling Brown at the 36th pick. You know, grabbing those 3-and-D prospects is never going to hurt. And Muschidi's just another opportunity for them to do that at this 46th pick.
Yeah, Philly has so many second-round picks. They have so many things that they can address in this draft. So Muschidi is an example of those guys that when his three-point shot is falling and he is really feeling his jump shot, he can be a valuable utility rotation player and could be a good piece in that Philly system. So that is a really good aspect of his game. So when he's really feeling his three-point shot, he's a valuable player, but outside of that, he does try really hard on defense and is a pretty solid individual defender, so that is a big upside for him, along with being able to make three-pointers when he really wants to. So when he at his best, he's a very solid utility rotation player, but there's some certain uncertainty with him since he's so raw, but Philly has so many opportunities to get guys that can develop and grow overseas, so this should be one of those guys.
Yeah, good thing for Machidi is he's still 18, so they have time to let him develop, obviously, and see, you know, what they have with him. You know, we mentioned with Rodion's Kirk's last episode, he could be one of those guys who never even plays in the NBA. It just depends how he develops. Machidi is probably the same story. They'll just see what they can get from him, see how he develops. And, of course, having a guy who's a draft and stash is a useful asset. We mentioned that in the section when we were talking about Isaiah Hartenstein in the second episode of this series. Having a draft and stash guy, you know, if another team really likes him, that becomes a very good asset in trade discussions. And, of course, even though Sam Hinkie's not there anymore, we do know that Philadelphia loves their assets. So Machidi could be another piece of that war chest for Philadelphia, and this would be a nice selection for them.
Yeah, he'd be an asset overseas when they put him there and he continue to develop and can be a piece that they, you know, hopefully can improve their future and continue to look towards building a championship team.
Yeah, exactly. Next up, we've got the Indiana Pacers picking at the number 47 spot. And this is a pick for them that I've really liked for a long time. And that is them adding in-state power forward who went to Valparaiso, Alec Peters, the man who put up some pretty stellar stats at Valparaiso last year. You know, 23 points a game, nearly 10 rebounds a game for those Crusaders last season. Just a guy with a lot of production, very good three-point shooter. And Indiana does not have a stretch backup power forward who can stretch the floor at all. You know, mostly they're using guys like LaVoy Allen, who are just basically these ground-bound big men. Whereas Peters, you know, not really the best athlete. That's somewhere where he struggles, but he's really an extremely good three-point shooter. You know, his percentage dropped a little bit during his senior season at Valparaiso, but he does have a very good looking stroke and a lot of pick and pop upside, and he does a lot well on the offensive end. You know, very refined scorer in college. We mentioned 18 points a game last season, 23 points a game this season, 44% last season from three-point, dropped to 36% this season before his college career, shot 41% on a total of almost 700 three-point attempts. So that's a very good sample. And of course, being an 89% free throw shooter last year, that just shows you the integrity that his stroke does have. And, you know, he's actually not an awful rebounder. You know, his rebound percentage last season, 16%. That's pretty good, especially for a guy who, you know, is kind of known as a stretch four prospect. He did do pretty well inside the arc last season, but Peters is going to struggle against that NBA length and athleticism. You know, at just 6'9 with a 6'11 wingspan, he's going to struggle to get his shots off inside. But the good news for Peters is, when he was playing against some higher-level competition last season, he did pretty well. You know, against Oregon and Kentucky, he managed to put up some pretty good games. He wasn't completely shut down by those teams. His rebounding waned a little bit in those games, if I remember correctly. But, you know, he was able to last in those games. Yeah, against Kentucky, he put up 23 points and 8 rebounds on 44% or 45% shooting from the floor. So that's not too bad. And then against Oregon, he was able to put up 24 points on 44% shooting from the floor. So, you know, maybe his efficiency dipped a little bit, but he was able to sustain his production against that higher level competition. So Peters is a guy who can be that pick and pop bench power forward for the Pacers that they need and that can fill a role for them coming off the bench.
Yeah, they've had a void at that power forward spot, and Peters gives them a guy who can be mobile and is really great at making three-point shots. And the other thing that is often overlooked when we're talking about Peters is, he's an underrated rebounder, so he's had a high percentage of rebounding stats, so that's certainly a good thing that you're looking at for a smaller guy at that four spot. But he also is a really good person for getting to the line and converting those free throws. So being able to get to the line and convert free throws is a big asset to go along with his excellent shot making ability. So that he'll be an interesting guy for Indiana and how they can fill a void with him.
Yeah, and while Larry Bird has definitely lessened his influence in that front office, taking those Indiana guys, keeping them in state is a fun thing to do with the Pacers. Peter's a smart player who could be a contributor to that Indiana team coming off the bench and fill a void for their bench unit. I think that's a great pick for them, and he's a guy who you know, he'll be a situational player. He doesn't really fit everywhere, but I think he's a guy who could be a good player in Indiana.
Yeah, Indianians are intensely loyal, so that's certainly good. But yeah, he certainly would be a big piece that they've been missing recently, so he'll be interesting in seeing how that they can use all of his shooting strengths next year.
Yeah, exactly. Next up, we have the Milwaukee Bucks picking at the number 48 spot, and they are making a pick that I have fallen in love with over the past few days. It sounds weird, but this kind of just came to me, and I was like, oh my gosh, I love this selection. This would be awesome if it happened, and that is them taking Caleb Swanigan, the ultra-productive big man from Purdue. And the reason that I love Swanigan in Milwaukee so much is because, you know, Swanigan, obviously, there's no question about his offensive ability, just an absolute stud on that end. You know, the phenomenal post score, but also 45% from three on 85% on 85 attempts last year, 18.7 assist percentage, extremely good for a big man, and that 22.5 total rebound percentage, just a beast of a rebounder. But, of course, the question for Swanigan comes on the defensive end. Given his poor mobility and his lack of height, you know, he probably can't defend centers, you know, at just 6'9 with a 7'3 wingspan. That's probably not big enough to protect the rim legitimately. And obviously that lack of quickness, although he will continue to shed weight from his frame, he's still going to struggle with quickness going forward. But the thing I love about Swanigan in Milwaukee is that that's a team without positions. So a guy without positions on defense, Milwaukee, that doesn't matter in Milwaukee because, you know, they can just have him guard the weakest offensive player that the other team has and match up one of their other phenomenally versatile defenders, you know, a guy like Giannis, obviously, or Chris Middleton or Tony Snell or whoever, and just game plan around Swanigan's defensive deficiencies and maximize him on the offensive end. You know, he'd give them that spread opportunity because, you know, Greg Monroe had a lot of success coming off the bench for the Bucks last season, and Swanigan could ostensibly fill those minutes with, except a little bit better, three-point shooting. You know, Monroe is pretty underrated as a passer, and I think Swanigan is too. He could contribute that, but at the same time also add in some three-point shooting. And Swanigan's a guy who I think in Milwaukee would absolutely thrive and could be, you know, potentially a sixth man of the year type candidate.
Yeah, he would fit really well with the boys up in Wisconsin. So as you're talking about, I think that his 7'3", very impressive 7'3" wingspan would sort of make up for his lack of size or quickness since he had such good grasp and with the ball. So I think that that shows and complements his offensive game and how excellent he was at Purdue. So if you're working with one of these either smaller rotations or these systems that don't have as many strict position rulings as other teams like the Bucks do, I think that Swanigan would be a great asset on offense and a guy that could really fit that system well as a guy coming off the bench and providing scoring and adding length to that lineup with other big guys and being a big-time offensive player. So he'd make a lot of sense there, and that'd be a really good value for them in the second round.
Yeah, and the Bucks are known for having these guys with freakishly long arms, and Swanigan is just another guy like that. And, you know, I think offensively he'd provide a ridiculously good value to them because, you know, Jabari Parker is questionable going forward, and when Giannis is off the court, they don't really have that ISO option who can get you a bucket. And, you know, maybe Swanigan's scoring doesn't translate all the way, but, man, he was dominant last season at Purdue, 80% at the rim, including a 45% from three-point. And so he's got that just pure scoring ability to go along with his ridiculous rebounding ability. And I think that he's a guy who could really help the Bucks and become a phenomenal bench weapon for them.
Yeah, he'd be a really great option for them.
Yeah, for sure. Next up, we've got the Denver Nuggets picking at number 49. And here's a guy that a lot of people might be wondering, you know, when is he going to come off the board? He's been sliding a lot. And finally, he is coming off the board. We've got the Denver Nuggets selecting Idris Bam Adebayo from Kentucky. And, you know, Adebayo's a guy who's kind of all over the place in terms of where he is on people's boards. You know, I've seen him as high as, you know, mid-first round. And I've got him at number 40 on my board. I'm not super low on him. It's just he was one of those guys who slid for me. I couldn't find a place for him that made sense. And I could definitely see him sliding on draft night to a spot like the Nuggets at 49, just because I think he's a guy who is a little bit caught between positions. You know, 6'10" with a 7'3" wingspan, that's passable center size, but he does appear a bit undersized at that spot, and he just has so little skill on offense that I am worried about if he's ever going to be more than a lob threat. But in a place like Denver, he could certainly fill that Kenneth Faried type role for that team if they want to move on from Kenneth Freed, which it seems like they've been trying to do for years now. And, you know, he doesn't have a lot of talent, but he's a strong dude. He's a good rebounder, and he's explosive around the rim. It's just the problem for him is he's going to struggle on defense because he's not very mobile. He struggled a lot when he got switched onto guards. He has no perimeter game on offense, and he's not really a defensive anchor on that end, and he's just got so little skill on offense. But in terms of an energy big coming off the bench, I think he could help Denver.
Yeah, he would make sense a lot in that Denver system, working with guys like Jokic. So, of course, he's from North Carolina, so, you know, I may not be able to point out his deficiencies, but he does pose a threat as a guy that can work inside well. But outside of that, you know, there's not too much that he does well, but he certainly is a big, strong guy and has a really great physical presence out there. So, as a freshman from Kentucky, he'd make sense for a team that's looking for a young talent in the second round. So when you're looking at guys that are much older in the second round, I think that he certainly has a lot more upside than other guys that may have stayed in longer. So since there's such a gluttony of big guys here, there's, you know, there's so many places that all of them could go, but he'd make a lot of sense in Denver.
Gluttony. I think you meant glut, right?
Yeah,
you're good. You're
same
good.
Difference.
Yeah. Anyways, Adebayo, I mean, I could see him going higher, you know. It wouldn't surprise me. It's just in this scenario that we were mocking, he ended up being the one who fell. I think, like I said, one of these big men's going to fall, or two of them will, like Swanigan and Adebayo did. It's just a matter of, you know, which team likes which guy. Next up, we've got the Philadelphia 76ers with their fourth second-round pick. This is getting exhausting talking about these guys. And we are having them take a guy that we basically feel obligated to have selected, even though neither of us are huge fans of him, and that's California's Ivan Rabb. You know, I've talked before about how I'm not a huge fan of Ivan Rabb. Just I was really disappointed with his sophomore season, and I don't really see what he does in the NBA besides rebound. But, you know, a team like Philadelphia has got enough picks where they can take this guy and say, look, people thought he was a lottery talent at one point. Let's see if we can get him back to being that. It's just Ivan Rabb is so – he's such a – I just – I don't like anything that he does particularly well. I mean, the rebounding's fine, but 6'10 with a 7'1.5 wingspan. We just talked about how Adebayo at 6'10 with a 7'3 wingspan is not big enough to play center. Rabb is much thinner than Adebayo and has a shorter wingspan, so he's definitely not going to be able to play center. And he is not nearly mobile enough to play power forward in the NBA regularly. So he's really just a guy who, at best, is an energy big, but his problem is he's not a very good athlete to be an energy big. So I really don't know what Rabb is going to do. I mean, people have talked themselves into him being a mid-range shooter, but he only shot 36% on two-pointers outside of the rim last year, so he really hasn't flashed much of that mid-range game that people talk about. So some people talk about him as a first-round prospect. I don't see that. I don't even really see him as a second-rounder. So I'm having him be taken because, you know, enough people see him as being valuable that he's probably going to get selected at some point. I don't see it with Rabb.
Yeah, he certainly had a very solid freshman season and then had a disappointing next year at Cal. So it'll be interesting to see where he goes and how he fits in with the system. Of course, he is a very a solid rebounder at Cal and showed that he has decent length with that 7'1.5 wingspan. But outside of that, there's questions about, you know, whether he can score outside of the paint or near the rim. So, and he isn't a fantastic free throw shooter at about 66%. So if you are certainly picking as Philadelphia can or has the luxury of picking just based on talent, it makes sense for them with so many second-round picks. It makes sense that they can take a swing on a guy that was highly valued last year and had good production, but it dipped a little bit. But outside of that, it'll be interesting to see, you know, there's not too many of his strengths that we've been able to see, but if he does go to Philly, you know, it'll be interesting to see what they can do with him.
Yeah, he'll probably end up going higher than this. I mean, I've seen him put a few times to the Lakers at 28, which I don't get it, but it could happen. So he'll probably go higher than this, but we're not fans of him. When he flames out, you can thank us. Next up, we've got the Denver Nuggets picking at 51, their third pick of this draft. And we've got them taking a Nuggetsy type player in Dwayne Bacon from Florida State. You know, just a guy who's a big-time athlete, you know, maybe not the best shooter, only shot, I think, 33% from three last year. But, you know, a big-time athlete who has the ability to put the ball in the bucket, a pretty talented scorer inside the arc, but he doesn't really do a whole lot else. He didn't prove a lot on defense last year. But as in terms of an athlete, I think he's a guy who could manage to crack the Nuggets roster and probably not going to get a lot of minutes just given their glut of guys in terms of young guys. But joining his former teammate Malik Beasley in Denver on the wing from Florida State, I think Bacon could be the type of player who fits in there.
Yeah, Nuggets like those really athletic guys that can sort of give them that high power and offensive threat. But when you're looking at his all-around game, outside of that athleticism that can, you know, propel him to the rim and being able to create shots, there's not too much outside of that. He's not spectacular on defense. And outside, he doesn't have too much of a touch with the ball. But if you're looking for that guy that can add physicality and speed to your offense, I think that he makes sense for the Nuggets since they haven't really addressed too many defensive guys so far in the draft. But he would add some athleticism and speed to, you know, an offense that is looking for guys like that.
Yeah, you know, if for some reason they were to lose Will Barton at some point, maybe Dwayne Bacon could soak up some of his minutes just as that, you know, athletic rim runner. He might have to get a headband, though, because Denver's always got those skinny guys running around the court in headband. I guess he's not that skinny, but, you know, he could fill the Will Barton role. He just need to get the headband for it.
Headband gang, dude. Gang, gang.
Yeah. Bacon, you know, 6'6" with a 6'10 wingspan, 221 pounds, strong guy. You'd think he'd be a good defender, but he just isn't. You know, he doesn't put in the effort on that end. Not his athleticism doesn't really show up on that end because he doesn't have good lateral quickness, and he just kind of quits when he gets beat off the dribble. Not a good sign to see. But, you know, we're in the second round. A lot of these guys are going to have some pretty major flaws, and Bacon does have some. But that athleticism is enticing for a team like Denver.
Yeah, he's with those crops of guys that are always so entertaining to watch. You know, the Hamano Diallos, those other guys that are so athletic but that have those flashes. But, you know, you question what other value that they give. I'd really like to see him go to, you know, an elite coach that can develop talent. You know, a Eric Spoelstra, a Greg Popovich that can, you know, take these athletic guys and do more with them and develop them on defense. But if he does end up going to the Nuggets, that makes sense in what they need and, you know, how he fits.
Yeah, I like Bacon in Denver. I think, you know, maybe he never even really pans out for them, but we're in the 50s. You know, guys don't usually pan out from this range. Next up, we've got the Washington Wizards picking at number 52. And what's been reported is that the Wizards are looking at guards with this pick. And so we had them snagging up a guard who's kind of been rising up a little bit over the past few weeks, particularly after his good performance at the Combine. And that is Oregon's Tyler Dorsey, the shooting guard slash point guard. I don't see him as a point guard, but some people do. From, of course, the Oregon Ducks. Dorsey's a guy, you know, he's a good shooter. There's no question about it. But the question is, what else does he bring to your team? And at the Combine, he did flash some of that, you know, rebounding the ball pretty well, creating for others pretty well. And that was good to see because, you know, it's going to be pretty hard for him to be a successful defender at just 6'4.5 with a 6'5 wingspan. That's going to make him struggle against two guards no matter what, particularly given the fact that he's really only probably below average as an athlete. But his three-point shot is really promising, and if he can continue to develop those combo guard skills, I think there will be a role for him in the league as a Seth Curry-type player.
Yeah, there wasn't too many questions about his three-point shot, even in college at Oregon. He hit big shots and was able to, you know, make, you know, shots outside and really use that to his advantage since that was one of his biggest advantages. But outside of that, at Oregon, there, you know, there wasn't too much that you could see that stood out to you on offense or defense since he was so undersized. But at the NBA Combine, he did show flashes of a well-rounded game. And on the Friday scrimmage, he did have 6 assists and did pretty well in creating shots for other people. So it makes sense that he sort of fits that shooting guard, combo guard mold, but he is undersized and you wonder what impact he'll have on defense. But the three-point shot, I guess, is certainly his biggest asset. So outside of that, you know, you don't always need anything else that's super outlandishly good, but the three-point shot is always promising.
Yeah, and it makes sense for Washington to go for a safer pick with this selection, given the fact that, you know, they're going to need whoever they get here to probably come in and be a contributor because their bench is pretty thin. I mean, you saw a guy like Sheldon McClellan, who went undrafted last season, end up playing real bench minutes for them down the stretch last season. So getting a guy like Dorsey, who, you know, is a pretty safe pick, just given the fact that his shooting ability should translate, I think that that makes sense for a team like the Wizards that's, again, going to be looking for that immediate contributor and going to be looking for a guy who can help them in the short term.
It'll be interesting to see, since the Wizards have so many guys in that backcourt, and how they'll figure out next year and, you know, hopefully continue their playoff run.
Yeah, exactly. Tyler Dorsey versus Sheldon McClellan for that backup two-guard spot will be an interesting thing to watch going into next season if the Wizards do, in fact, select him here. Next up, we've got the Boston Celtics picking at number 53, their third selection of the draft, their second of three second-round picks. And we had them going with an international big man once again, a different type of big man from the last one they picked, more of an energy-type big. A guy who's drawn comparisons to Tarik Black on the Lakers is Matthias Lessort from Nanterre in France. And Lessort is a guy who's got a pretty simple game, you know, really just an energy big man who plays hard all over the court. And, you know, maybe not the biggest dude, 6'9" with a 7'1" wingspan, probably power forward size with the center's game, caught in that same sort of vein as a lot of guys in this class are. But he's very athletic, and he plays with extreme motor. He throws his weight around on the offensive boards. He grabs steals. You know, he can do some pretty cool stuff with his athleticism. It's just a matter of developing that skill, and he does have pretty poor size. So maybe he can crack the Celtics roster, but Lessort's a guy who's really just providing a lot of energy to a team wherever he ends up.
Yeah, there's so many big men in this draft, certainly in the second round, that it's interesting to figure out where all of them go and, you know, their uniqueness. Matthias is certainly one of those guys that's sort of stuck between positions. He's undersized for a center, and it'd be interesting to see, you know, he isn't a perfect guy that could protect the rim like the Celtics need, but he does provide, of course, an energy boost and would be a decent guy coming off the bench. And even though he's too small for that center spot, he doesn't show the playmaking ability or shooting range of a person that can fit at that four spot either. So it's certainly interesting to see how he can fit and what position he can play in that Celtics offense that is so desperately in need of big guys that can make an impact.
Yeah, I'd probably say that he'll end up being a nice player for the main Red Claws next season or for Nanterre, wherever he ends up. But I just don't see him really contributing at all to Boston next season unless he makes a huge jump in terms of his skill level. I actually, this is going to sound probably dumb just because it's very unlikely to happen. It's very rare. But he's the type of guy who I could see making the Paul Millsap leap. You know, obviously Millsap came out, I think, number 47 in the 2006 draft. And as he developed his shooting stroke and playmaking ability, he became a phenomenal all-around player. And while Lessort hasn't really flashed any of that, he's got that sort of starting point that Millsap had as like a rebounder and that same sort of size and motor and everything. And I could see it happening. I'm not saying it will happen. I'm not even saying that there's even a chance it will. It's just I could see it happening, if you know what I mean. So Lessort has a nice baseline for a player, and if he does add some skill, I think he can become a useful player down the line.
Yeah, I think that his effort level and the work that he, of course, puts in international play is important. So that makes sense. And if he continues to develop like he has been, hopefully he can be somebody who can, you know, surprise a lot of people in the second round.
Yeah, definitely. Next up, we've got the Phoenix Suns with their third pick of the night after picking Josh Jackson at number 4 and Jordan Bell at number 32, and this time they are going to go with a guard after going with a forward and a big man with their first two picks. And we have them taking the injured point guard from Xavier, Edmund Sumner. Sumner's a guy who, you know, I like his athleticism. I think that, you know, a guy as big as he is who can get to the rim like he can and explode at 6'6" with a 6'9" wingspan, that's really impressive. It's just, I think Sumner has a lot of refinement that he needs to add to his game. You know, he's obviously a very poor three-point shooter, and his jump shot mechanics really need a lot of work. You know, he misses left and right, which is something you really don't want to see. And, you know, his shot selection and point guard decision-making ability, that's definitely still in the works. You know, he often will drive into the lane without a plan and end up just slamming into guys. And then, of course, the other big question with Sumner is his injury history, you know, with that torn ACL this year, and he has a history of leg injuries in his past, two serious knee injuries, and a shoulder surgery. And with a game so predicated on athleticism, it's probably tough to bank on his athleticism getting all the way back to what it was. So Sumner's a risky pick, but, you know, the Suns can afford that with so many point guards on their roster right now. You know, Eric Bledsoe, Brandon Knight, Tyler Ulis, and they can take Sumner and use that, of course, that much vaunted Phoenix training staff, see if they can get him back to full strength and come out with a bit of a steal, given a guy who's slipped mainly due to injury concerns.
Yeah, Sumner has a really good physical frame at 6'5 and a 6'9.5 wingspan, so he certainly has the physical gifts to be an elite point guard, but you have to wonder, you know, if he does have this injury history, you know, whether he'll be able to make a full recovery and how his athleticism will be impacted in the coming years. So I liked him at Xavier. He showed flashes of those physical gifts, but with his injury history, it'll be interesting to see, you know, how much he gets back and whether he can utilize and develop things outside of just athleticism.
Yeah, Sumner, again, with that Phoenix training staff, I think that could really help him. And, I mean, I still don't know if he ever becomes much of a player, even if he gets back, just because he lacks shooting and decision-making. But, hey, you're taking shots here in the last 10 picks of the draft, so Sumner definitely represents a chance to do that. Next up, we've got the Utah Jazz with their fourth pick of the night at number 55 taking, and we've got them taking Jonathan Motley from Baylor, the big man who won the Karl Malone trophy last year, somehow got it over Caleb Swanigan. That was a bit of a surprise. But anyways, Motley's a guy who I like. I think, you know, he's got some good mobility, got some very good motor, you know, 19.2 total rebound percentage, very good rebounder, and he's got very long arms as well. You know, 6'9" with a 7'4" wingspan. That's one of the longer wingspans in this draft. You know, that's probably gives him some size to play center. Maybe not for long stretches, but he is a fairly well sized dude. 9 foot standing reach. Not an elite number, but decent enough that he can last minutes at center, especially given his good mobility. And another thing I really like about Motley is that he's a very good post up player. You know, he was a really good scorer at Baylor. He put up about 17 points a game, drew a lot of fouls as well, 7.1 free throw attempts per 40. And so I think that he's a guy who maybe doesn't have one elite skill besides rebounding, but he's a guy who could definitely be a useful player maybe in Europe for a couple seasons and then come back to the NBA more seasoned and see what he can bring to a team.
Yeah, Motley is an interesting case. He played well at Baylor all three seasons, but he certainly doesn't have a huge body footprint outside of his 7'4 wingspan, which is impressive. He is a very athletically gifted guy, and makes sense that he would be a good position for the Jazz, who need those guys that can be energy boosters. So if you do end up being able to, you know, develop him and continue to grow his talents outside of just being this energy guy, I think you get more man out of him in the coming years. So Utah is certainly positioned to can take a risk on a guy who has a lot of upside but also has a lot of questions.
Yeah, Motley, if he can extend his range to the three-point arc, that'd be really interesting, because he flashed some mid-range ability last season, and of course that's the natural progression for a guy who grows his mid-range shot, is to extend to the three-point line. And that's why I think a couple years playing in EuroLeague could really help him. But another thing about Motley to mention is that he has been out for a while with, I think, a knee injury. And that is something to watch, because his game, as Cesar mentioned, is very dependent on his athleticism. So that knee injury will be something to watch. But again, I think he's a guy who could thrive in Europe for a couple seasons. You know, you saw a guy like Kem Birch this season really impress people at the EuroLeague Final Four. And he's probably going to go back and get an NBA contract now, a couple years after coming out from UNLV. Motley could be in that same boat of guys who spends a couple years overseas refining his game and then comes back a more refined player with a better skill set and ready to come off the bench and contribute to an NBA team.
Yeah, that'll be interesting to see what they can do and how they can develop him.
Yeah, definitely. Next up, into our last five picks, the Boston Celtics have their fourth pick of the night. And finally, after going with a point guard and two big men, they are addressing the wing. And we have them going with the potential 3-and-D specialist from Miami and Devon Reed, who's a guy, you know, I'm sort of split on Reed. I think he's a pretty nice player, but I don't think he's elite at either the 3 or the D. You know, 39% from 3, 83% free throw shooter. That's good three-point shooting numbers, but it's not quite elite. And then on defense, you know, he is a 6'5.5 guy with a 7-foot wingspan, but he just doesn't always show that intensity, and he can get beat by quicker players. He's not a phenomenal athlete. So I think he's got some upside as a 3-and-D guy if, you know, he can be more locked in on defense and that three-point shot really improves. But I think he's more of just a shot on a three-point guy versus actually a true 3-and-D guy.
Yeah, I think he certainly flashed a really good three-point shot making ability. He showed that he can create his own shot from the outside and obviously had a nice touch on the ball and his time in at Miami. But you do, as we've been talking about, question, you know, his strength on the other side of the floor. He doesn't have huge size or stature, but he does have those intangible gifts that I think that will help him, you know, be a decent defender. But at this point, so many teams are looking for those guys that can really excel on defense along with shooting the three ball. So he's, I think, mastered one of those parts and obviously is a very good three-point shooter, but you have to question on how much he can develop on the other side.
Yeah, I'm a bit lower on his three-point shooting just because it wasn't quite an elite number from the college level, but I do like his stroke and that free throw percentage is promising. I think he's a guy who will help the Maine Red Claws win a lot of games next season, but in terms of contributing to the Celtics, I mean, with such a stacked roster and already having four picks in this draft, I really don't see him making their roster. But, you know, he's an interesting player. Maybe he becomes something down the line. Next up, we've got the Brooklyn Nets picking with the number 57 pick in this draft, their only second-round pick in this draft. And they are going to go with a guy who I think could end up becoming a useful contributor for them, and that's Damian Dotson from Houston. Now, Dotson is a you know, he doesn't really do a whole lot, but he does one thing very well, and that one thing is shoot three-pointers. 44% on almost 8 attempts a game last year at Houston, and also a good jump shooter from two-point, you know, 45% on two-pointers outside the rim, a good number. And in terms of being a three-point specialist, he's very good at that. You know, he only turned the ball over on a very low number of his possessions last year, 6.7 turnover percentage. That's extremely low. And Dotson's got that legit size as a two guard and maybe even a three at 6'5.5 with a 6'9 wingspan. And the guy that I've compared him to is Anthony Morrow, a former Brooklyn Net. You know, maybe not the highest upside contributor just as like a pure three-point shooter, but Morrow's been a solid bench player in the league for almost 10 years now thanks to his ability to shoot the three ball and stay alive in other parts of the court. You know, neither of them are very good defenders, but they've got just enough size that they can survive on that end. And I think Dotson's a guy who, you know, if he doesn't get drafted, he'll impress with Summer League and get on with an NBA team like Morrow did. Or if he goes at the back end of the second, he'll become a guy who, you know, can help a team like the Nets that is desperately looking for contributors. And he can potentially put up some pretty big stats on some Nets teams like Morrow did 6 or 7 years ago.
Yeah, Dotson makes sense as one of those specialists that's extremely gifted at shooting three-pointers. So Houston, of course, was a team that really benefited from his excellent shooting outside of the arc. So the Nets would certainly benefit from having those guys that can fill positions and contribute in one area. So they're while Dotson, you know, doesn't do too much outside of shooting 3 points, he's so good at that, you know, you don't need anything. You don't need at this point, you're shooting for guys that can really be gifted in one area, and Dotson can be that guy.
Yeah, and a thing to mention with Dotson was he did win MVP at the Portsmouth Invitational Tournament for those college seniors, and he did flash some more playmaking ability there. I think he averaged like 6 assists a game over the course of the PIT. So maybe if he can bring that to an NBA team, he becomes much more than just an Anthony Morrow. But obviously the PIT is a pretty small sample. But that is worth noting for Dotson. And I think he's a guy that, you know, with the Nets looking for contributors everywhere, he's a guy that could help them out. Next up, we are at the number 58 pick with the New York Knicks selecting. And we have them going with a high upside combo guard in Kobe Simmons from Arizona. You know, I'm not super high on Kobe Simmons. I don't think he does a lot very well. You know, he's the number 66 player on my board. I'm just not convinced of his upside at the NBA level because he's a pretty poor defender. And he wasn't a very good scorer last year, only a 12.3 player efficiency rating. And so, or 12.9 player efficiency rating, excuse me. His jump shot is just not very good. He shot below 40% from the field last year. And, I mean, he's got that good athleticism and he's got some good size, you know, 6'4" with a 6'6" wingspan. But at 166 pounds, he's really thin. And for a freshman, he's not that young, you know. He'll be 20 by the time next season starts. So, I mean, he's a guy the Knicks could take a shot on and try to develop his athleticism. But I think he's mostly a project guard at this point, and he's a guy that they'd be drafting mostly for upside.
Yeah, at this point, the Knicks' best bet is, or Kobe Simmons' best bet is the advantage that he has in youth. You know, he's one of the very few freshmen that are going to still be around this area in the draft at 58. So he makes sense in terms of having athleticism and being a decent floor general. Of course, he didn't shoot particularly well from mid-range or from three-point shot, shooting less than 33% from three. But if you're talking about Knicks, they absolutely need a guy that can fill that one spot. And if they, you know, put in enough effort, I think that they can utilize his speed and size and hopefully develop his shooting and his defensive game.
Yeah, I think if he pans out, he can become maybe a useful microwave scorer. But outside of that, I just don't know. I mean, it's going to be hard for him to add enough strength to be useful on defense. And he's definitely a zero guard, as some have termed it, caught between positions as not being the distributor of a point guard, but not really having that shooting guard skill set either. So Simmons isn't a guy that I love, but I think that he's a guy who will end up getting drafted on draft night, and a team like the Knicks does make sense for him. We're now on to the last two picks of this draft, and we've got the San Antonio Spurs picking at number 59, and we've got them taking a very Spurs-esque player in Nigel Williams-Goss from Gonzaga. You know, Williams-Goss is a guy who, you know, isn't flashy with his game really, but he's a guy who can get it done. You know, very good defender, one of the best defenders in the NCAA last season in terms of metrics, and he's just a very good perimeter defender. You know, at the combine, posted incredible numbers in the lane agility test, and has some good size for defending point guards, 6'3" with a 6'7" wingspan. And offensively, you know, doesn't do a whole lot. You know, only 37% from three. But the thing is that Williams-Goss does well on offense is he's very crafty inside of 15 feet. You know, he has one of the best floater games in this draft, and he's a very good free throw shooter, 87% from the line on 5.8 free throw attempts per 40 minutes. So he was able to get to the line. And so his floater game is something that will help him, and I think is just like a solid defender at the NBA level who maybe can run your offense for a little bit. He's the type of guy that the Spurs would like to develop and see if they can add to his jump shot a little bit and turn him into a better player.
Yeah, I like Nigel Williams-Goss a lot. I think that he makes sense in that Spurs system that really develop guys and can take guys that are older or, you know, already have made progressions towards, you know, reaching their peak and, you know, and put him in the right system. So as an excellent defender, I think Nigel Williams-Goss will absolutely find a position on a team, and Spurs being such a defensive-minded team as they are, he makes a lot of sense for them. And with the uncertainty that they have at point guard with Tony Parker going down and then before the era of Murray, their future point guard, who we both are very high on, he makes a lot of sense in terms of being able to run the floor well and being a good facilitator as well as an inside scorer to complement his defense. So he makes a lot of sense there.
Yeah, I think down the road, the guy I've kind of compared him to is he can maybe be a light version of Patrick Beverley if he can improve his three-point shot. But of course, it's very hard to match Beverley's intensity. But Williams-Goss, in terms of being a 3-and-D off-ball point guard, could end up being a guy like that at some point. And then we are now moving into the last pick of a guy who I actually really like in terms of comparing him to Patrick Beverley, and that is my guy from Arizona, Kadeem Allen. Obviously, probably the oldest player that's going to get drafted, him or Chris Boucher, who I'm a little lower on. But Kadeem Allen at 24, obviously very old, but he's got very refined skills in what he's going to be at the NBA level, and that is an off-ball point guard who is an absolute freak on defense and who can hit open threes. You know, 6'2" with a 6'9" wingspan, a strong 192-pound frame, and a guy who will go all out on the defensive end. You know, he really shut down Markelle Fultz when Arizona played Washington. You know, maybe not in terms of volume stats, but he really made the game difficult for Markelle. And he's a point guard who just, man, he plays so hard on that end of the floor, and you can see his defense showing up. And the stats say it too. You know, the stats back him up as a good defender. And then in terms of his three-point shot, 43% from three this past season. And 3-and-D point guards, I think, will be valuable in certain situations where you have a ball-dominant two-guard. And maybe Atlanta isn't that spot, but they're a team that could definitely be looking for a backup point guard. And Allen would certainly be a useful backup point guard, especially in a place where, you know, Coach Bud can develop guys that have that 3-and-D skill set.
Yeah, Kadeem Allen's biggest asset, as we both noted, is his tenacity on defense. He's one of those guys that, you know, doesn't care at all. He'll just go out there and, you know, bite your head off. So he makes a lot of sense being such a defensive stopper and in a Hawks system that needs some defensive presence, since Dennis Schroeder isn't, you know, always in tune for that side of the ball. But Kadeem Allen shows that, you know, not only can he be a huge defensive impact, but he can also hit open threes and is an excellent free throw shooter. So when he does go to the line, he makes those shots count. So he makes sense and has a lot of value as a guy that can reinforce your defense and bring another weapon to your offense.
Yeah, Kadeem Allen's probably never going to contribute more than just hitting open threes to an offense, especially given his age. But I think he's a guy who could be useful for a team looking for a defensive stopper at the point guard spot. And that brings us to the end of our mock draft. We've made it through four parts and 60 picks, and we are here at the end, and we're just going to go and recap team by team who they selected. Figured this was a better way to do it than going just through the picks to tell everyone like which teams came out with what. So first with the Celtics, at number one, they got Markelle Fultz. At number 37, they got Anzej Prosekniks. At number 53, they got Matthias Lesort. And at number 56, they came out with Davon Reed. And then the Lakers, at number 2, got Lonzo Ball. And number 28, got Tony Bradley. And us at Hardwood Homies, we're going to lock in those picks for the Lakers. We're going to guarantee that the Lakers take Lonzo Ball 2 and Tony Bradley 28. That's happening. Believe it.
Boom.
And then 76ers, at number 3, took De'Aaron Fox. At number 36, took Sterling Brown. At number 39, took Rodion Skurux. At number 46, took Josh Hart. And then at number 50, took the Cal big man, Ivan Rabb. The Phoenix Suns, at number 4, took Josh Jackson. At number 32, took Jordan Bell. And number 54, took the point guard from Xavier, Edmund Sumner. The Sacramento Kings, at number 5, took Dennis Smith Jr. Number 10, OG Anunoby. And number 34, Wesley Iwundu. That's a great draft for the Kings. If this were the draft they walked away with, they would be in great position going forward. The Orlando Magic walked away with Jason Tatum at the number 6 pick, Justin Patton at the number 25 pick, DJ Wilson at the number 33 pick, and Frank Mason at the number 35 pick. Pretty good draft for the Magic. Good jump start on their rebuild. The Timberwolves, with their one pick at number 7, grabbed our guy Jonathan Isaac, who, again, awesome fit in Minnesota. We absolutely love that. The New York Knicks, at number 8, were able to grab the shooting guard from Kentucky, Malik Monk. Number 44, Arnoldas Kulboka, the forward from Bamberg. And at number 58, Kobe Simmons, the point guard from Arizona. The Mavericks, with their sole pick at number 9, grabbed the big man from Gonzaga, Zach Collins. We talked about that surprise pick in our first episode. If you haven't already, go listen to us break that pick down, because it is a very interesting pick. The Charlotte Hornets, at number 11, took Lauri Markkanen, the Finnish sniper from Arizona, and 41, Sindarius Thornwell. The Detroit Pistons took Frank Ntilikina with their sole pick at number 12. Denver Nuggets took our guy, Jonah Bolden, at number 13, and then at 49 took Bam Adebayo, and at 51, Dwayne Bacon, filling in that front court for them. The Miami Heat, at number 14, took Justin Jackson, of course, from North Carolina, to fill that hole at the small forward spot for them. The Portland Trailblazers, with their 3 first-round picks, walked away with Harry Giles at number 15, Semi Ojeleye at number 20, and Frank Jackson at number 26, grabbing a big man, a forward, and a guard. The Chicago Bulls took Jared Allen at number 16 and TJ Leaf at number 38. The Milwaukee Bucks took Donovan Mitchell at number 17 and Caleb Swanigan at 48. If that was a real draft for the Bucks, that would be a phenomenal draft. I mean, they would be that much more set towards dominating the East after LeBron's gone. Of course, trying to contend with the 76ers as they try to build their super team. The Indiana Pacers took Luke Kennard at number 18, and Alec Peters at number 47, adding in a couple shooters to prepare for whether Paul George leaves or even if they decide to bring him back. And then the Atlanta Hawks went with two different types of big men, with John Collins at number 19 and Ike Onakboju at number 31, and then added the Bulldog point guard Kadeem Allen with the 60th pick. The Oklahoma City Thunder went and got a backup for Russell Westbrook and grabbed Juwan Evans at the 21st pick. The Brooklyn Nets grabbed the French big man Jonathan Jean at the 22nd pick and Kyle Kuzma at the 27th pick. And then also with their second round pick, got Damian Dotson at number 57, the shooting guard from Houston. And then the Raptors, with their only pick in the first round, got Derek White at number 23, the much celebrated shooting guard and slash point guard from Colorado. The Utah Jazz got Isaiah Hartenstein at number 24, Terrence Ferguson at number 30, Monte Morris at number 42, and Jonathan Motley at number 55. Draft with a lot of different players for the Jazz. Maybe some of those guys end up playing overseas because their roster is so full. The San Antonio Spurs took Cameron Oliver, number 29, and Nigel Williams-Goss, number 59, adding a couple of guys who could really boost their defense while also adding some three-point shooting on offense. The New Orleans Pelicans grabbed Dylan Brooks with the 40th pick to try to inject some playmaking and shooting onto their team. The Houston Rockets took Tyler Lydon at number 43 and Josh Hart at number 45. And then, of course, the Washington Wizards took Tyler Dorsey at number 52 to fill that backup shooting guard spot. And then the Cavaliers, Warriors, Clippers, and Grizzlies, of course, did not have any picks in this draft. I think that covers everybody. I don't think we missed anybody in terms of recapping that. And yeah, that's it. That's our four-part mock draft. We've gone through all 60 picks. And our ideas of the mock will probably change as the draft approaches because, of course, every day we wake up thinking differently about these guys because this draft class is very fascinating. And there are a lot of different ways to think about this, different ways to look at these guys. And it's going to be really fun to see how the actual draft goes. And, you know, when all 60 picks go exactly as we predicted them, you know, it'll be awesome, you know. That's how it goes.
Exactly, dude. We predicted it. The future.
Yeah. Not really. Of course not. But it's fun to do these to see, you know, analyze how certain teams and certain prospects fit together and then just discuss the prospects and teams themselves, obviously. And, you know, this was a lot of fun doing this four-part series. And this was a great thing to do. And if you've made it to the end of this and you somehow, for some reason, haven't listened to the previous three, be sure to go listen to those. And again, be sure to leave a review on iTunes because we want people to keep finding our show so we can keep producing for listeners like you all who are listening right now. And yeah, that's it. You got anything else you want to add, Cesar?
I'd just like to say the Charlotte Hornets obviously won this draft with Markkanen and the boys Thornwell. So just wait. Bringing a ring back to NC. But outside of that, you know, man, I'm glad that we did a whole mock draft. Thanks everybody for tuning in. If you made it through all four parts, you're really dedicated. So thanks. And we'll be back next week with some new content.
Yeah, for sure. Stay tuned, leave those reviews, and keep listening. Thanks, y'all.
Bye.